When you haven't found love, it can feel like everyone else has. It's in every movie, every song, and all the PDA. Looking for love sucks. Thankfully, California Psychics can give you the guidance you need to find the one. We guarantee, if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. And new customers receive 20 minutes for just $20. Visit CaliforniaPsychics.com and experience the joy of certainty. California Psychics.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
And he has tied the great Ichiro on the Mariners' all-time home run leaderboard. It is 1-0 Mariners.
Woo, here we go, here we go. Trade deadline day, yep. Let's kick it off with the home run call of the day. Julio Rodriguez going deep, Aaron Goldsmith with the home run. It was a great day for the Mariners with Julio Rodriguez's home run, except for they lost. They lost to the A's. But still, that no matter, they are still a wild card team right now. They are tied with the Rangers for the last wild card spot in the American League. And more importantly, potentially, they continue to be the stars of the trade deadline so far. You already obviously got a first baseman, Josh Naylor. Now you get a third baseman and the most coveted bat in all of the baseball world, the trade deadline, is Gino Suarez. They get him back after trading him a couple years ago. They get him back from the Arizona Diamondbacks. Best bat on the market. The Mariners just secured him. We'll see how that works out. So you can't say they didn't try. Much like last year, you know, Randy Arozarena, Justin Turner. This is next level. Josh Naylor, Gino Suarez. The bats keep on coming. We'll see how it works out. And it also punctuated a day that bizarrely became chaotic a little bit. It was very late in the day, but all of a sudden, boom, 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 all this stuff happened. You had a flurry of potentially impactful deals. You have some moves that maybe, well, we'll look back and like, oh, that was an important move, but we didn't get a lot of play. But we'll give it play right now. Steven Matz went to the Red Sox. Steven Matz, of course, lefty pitcher. Cubs got a couple pitchers, Andrew Kittredge, Michael Soraka. Zach Littell from the program landed with the Reds in a three-way deal. The Astros get Ramon Urias, but I believe the Astros might be doing more. Who knows? The Tigers got Rafael Montero, reliever. So those are some of the deals that went down, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about big deals like Gino Suarez and the big deals that kicked things off yesterday. The wave of activity, and that was the Mets and the Phillies going back and forth and marking their trade deadline territory. Yep. First, it was getting Tyler Rogers from the Giants for the Mets. The Mets, yeah, they gave up some prospects that you've heard of, but still, no matter, it is what it is. Cost of doing business. You get a guy who can pitch in the highest leverage of the highest leverage, and that's Tyler Rogers. Then, so the Mets get Tyler Rogers, and everyone's like, wow, they're going for it. They're the ones who are bolstering their bullpen. Cost a lot. That's what the bullpen market, that's what it exists in the trade deadline. Well, you know what? The team that they're going head-to-head with, the team they're going back and forth in the National League East, the Phillies, you knew Dave Dombrowski was going to do this. It was very, very simple about what the Phillies needed. They needed a closer. They needed a no doubt about it game ender. And they got it with Joey Duran. Yep. Duran, who still has 2 years of control, this was the biggest deal of the day, I think. Because you look at Gino Suarez, he was a rental. You know, Rogers is rental. So far, Duran's the biggest deal, and obviously it cost a lot, the Phillies. But so be it. There is no better person in baseball, no better executive baseball, in finding the final pieces to fill in on the contending team's puzzle. And that's what Dave Dombrowski did with Duran, getting him from Minnesota. Also, that didn't end things. The Mets, they come back. Ryan Helsley, a guy who is could also be considered a closer, where you have these two guys, Helsley and Rogers, going with Edwin Diaz. All right, you know what? We can't get a starter. Well, we'll just make the back end of the bullpen as good as it can be. Sure enough, that's what the Mets tried to do. That's what they did. It was about a matter of a couple hours that these three deals went down. It was great. It was awesome. There's still plenty to go. Obviously, we're still waiting for the run and starting pitchers. But this was a pretty good start to setting the scene of what should be a chaotic day. All right, well, helping us make sense of the Mets deals, once again, is our great friend Tim Britton of The Athletic. Tim knows what's what when it comes to the awesome National League East race, which currently has the Phillies one half game in back of the Mets. By the way, on this podcast, as an added bonus, I also sat down with another member of the Phillies organization, and that is Lucas Sims. Lucas lived the life of a trade deadline participant last year. He was dealt from Cincinnati to the Red Sox at the deadline just about a year ago. So I always love talking about guys who have gone through it, and I really enjoyed talking with Lucas. But before we get to Lucas, let's get to Tim. Here's Tim Britton. You got it. There is nobody in the planet I'd rather be talking to than Tim Britton, who is live in San Diego. Well, live, sort of. Well, he's in San Diego. He's in San Diego. Where stuff happens, he is there, boots on the ground, Tim Britton, The Athletic. What a day for you. Take us behind the scenes of the Tim Britton day.
Yeah, you know, it started with a radio hit in Boston at 5:30 local time here in the morning. I did a radio
really?
Appearance. Yeah, I agreed to that before I remembered I was going to be on the West Coast. And then you go through the Mets got swept. They lost today to the Padres in a 5-0 game that I did not watch as closely as I would a normal game because early in the contest they made the trade for Tyler Rogers. After the game they made the trade for Ryan Helsley. So trades that. The Helsley trade did not, I think that was a name that we had connected to the Mets the past couple of days, a guy who made a lot of sense for them. But coming on the heels of a Rogers deal that was a little bit less expected, he was not a name that was out there really on the market with the Giants looking more like buyers until these last couple of days. For them to make both of those moves was a bit surprising, given that they've already added Gregory Soto to the bullpen. That's they're going pretty aggressively adding to the back end of their bullpen. With an eye toward October and taking it two steps farther than last year and winning a World Series.
So there's a few things to cut through here because it was a crazy day in the sense. Well, it started with the Taylor Rogers thing, right? When the Taylor Rogers thing goes down and people see the return, I think that people saw names they were semi-familiar with, so they freaked out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, no, it's Tyler Rogers because I'm going to make that mistake myself.
Oh, is it?
It goes back and like we've had this issue at The Athletic all day making sure.
Oh, really?
Because Taylor was also traded from Cincinnati.
By the way, so. Taylor also appearing on the Baseballs and Boring program podcast about a month ago had revealed that he packs every pair of underwear he owns on every trip for instances just like this.
That's the case.
Because he's been traded so many times, which should be a good rule of thumb for everybody.
Every player.
Forget about every player, every person. So, all right. Well, when the Rogers was traded, like people, they see Gilbert, they see
Tidwell and Buteau.
Tidwell, yeah, especially Tidwell, the top one of top pitching prospects. And they freak out. Like, they're like, you've got this rental reliever for these guys. Because if you go back to – Gilbert's always been on sort of the radar of people ever since the deal. He was in the
The Verlander trade back
Verlander
in
deal. The
2023,
Verlander deal.
yes.
And we interviewed him, and like it when you're in when you know that he was the guy. He was going to be the guy. So when you do this deal, everyone freaks out. You got a rental reliever for this. But I'm going to let you go rant and give your opinion in a second. But like the way that I looked at him, like, and I tweeted this, I said, hey, listen, good for Stearns, man. Like, I don't know if any of these guys are going to be upside all-stars. And if you get the chance to win, you win. Like, this is. I've done the exercise enough to know in the last couple of years, especially where the minor leaguers who are traded don't have an impact in making teams and GMs throw up all over themselves when it comes to giving them up. So that was my reaction. I think that and you tell me how you thought, but I think that people in baseball were like, oh, that's a lot to give up. But was it?
Yeah, like I agree that the initial reaction when you said, I think as the news broke, we heard first Gilbert and Tidwell, and I was like, oh, that's a good amount. And then that Buto was the third, that the third piece was Buto, was a guy off the major league roster. That does, raise your eyebrows a little bit for a rental reliever. At the same time, the reliever market is much higher priced this year than it has been in years past. I think, my colleague at The Athletic, Will Salmon, said basically like the Jason Adam trade last year, where the Rays got back a recent first round pick for a reliever, kind of changed the landscape of that market. And you had a lot of guys available with control beyond this year, and that was something the Mets were less interested in paying the price for, and going after a Duran from Minnesota, or Griffin Jacks, or some other guys who are on the market. So, and then with the three guys they gave up for Rodgers, you can kind of they all kind of straddle the line between two different types of players. Like, you look at Tidwell, is he a big league starter or is he a big league reliever? If you think he's a big league starter, this is a lot to give up. If you think he's a big league reliever, it makes more sense. With Gilbert, is he a corner outfielder or a center fielder? If he plays center, this is a lot to give up. If he plays a corner, it's not as bad a sacrifice. And with Buto, he's been in middle relief for the Mets. He's pitched some seventh innings for them, but is he a true setup guy? He hasn't pitched on back-to-back days at any point this season. Hasn't done that in more than a year. So there was some concern about like his durability if he's going to be one of your big late game guys. So is he more a middle reliever or a late game reliever? He's a middle reliever again. Not a huge piece you're going to miss. Those are all, if you think that Tidwell's a reliever, Buto's a middle reliever, and Gilbert's a corner outfielder, those are pieces you can replace and develop from within. And the Mets feel like they're at a spot with their player development system that they can do that now. If you are a little bit higher on each of them, then man, that's an overpay, because you're giving up a guy who can start for 6 years, a guy who can relieve for five more in Buto, a guy who can play center for 6 years. That's a ton to give up for 2 months of a setup man.
But you mentioned Adam. That isn't, again, that wasn't something that the Padres were like, oh my goodness, I couldn't believe we did that. And he's been awesome. And he actually had control too. He had to control another year of control. But then, a little while later, we'll get to the Phillies move in a second. But then you go out and you get Helsley, which is obviously, perceived as a closer, but you're just loading up the back end of that bullpen. And the names that came back in that, like the wonky minor league and analysts were saying, oh, that's a lot to give up. It wasn't like the Gilbert and Tidwell, like a lot of people knew of them. Some of these other guys that like and then when the Helsley trade, they were like, oh man, they might not have known. But what's your perspective of what they give up for Helsley?
Yeah, it's a really different prospect package because it's three guys in high A,
Right.
rather than the other three guys are in the bigs or right near it. Jesus Baez is the big piece that's going back to St. Louis. He's a guy who's been a top 10 prospect in the Mets system, I think, according to most publications, for a couple of years now. He's played second, short, and third, has the body that looks like he's going to be playing third long term. Has some chase and some swing and miss, but doesn't strike out as much as you would think given those things, and hits the ball hard. So, like, again, a guy who could be an average to above average everyday player if things break right. The other two guys they gave up, Nate Dom and Frank Ellisalt, those are guys they drafted last year, Dom in the third round, Ellisalt in the 19th. But we're having really nice seasons for them, kind of guys moving up in the prospect rankings because of the years they were having. But again, this goes back to the Mets' confidence that, if they could make guys drafted in the third and 19th round last year into reasonable trade pieces in 13 months, they should be able to do that consistently going forward with other guys. And they felt coming into this month that the way they had that built their player development operation, that especially on the pitching side of things, they had a lot more depth there than they used to have. You talk about prospects you regret giving up. The poster child for that right now is Pete Crow Armstrong, and the Mets gave up 4 years ago in that deal for Javi Baez and Trevor Williams. And one of the reasons they had to give up Crow Armstrong was because they couldn't build the kind of 3-for-1 package that the Mets did today for those guys. They only had 5 or 6 good prospects in their system. They gave up the one they felt they could give up at the time in Crow Armstrong because he was the farthest from the big leagues back then. And they've come to regret that. They didn't have the depth of contributors in their farm system that they do now, that they can pull from now to make these kinds of trades.
By the way, that's an excellent San Diego shirt you have on.
I do pack according to the city, as you
Yeah,
know.
it's like, yeah, I was going to say that. I don't think you've broken that out in Citi Field. I bet you haven't broke that out in Citi Field once. It's like you're respecting the moment. I appreciate that. So when it comes to the Mets, and they do this shock and awe in terms of like the back in the bullpen, which I love. I love because. Championship teams, you don't want to get caught short there. That's the worst case scenario. I remember last year, I think it was Cleveland. It was just like they just, even the Mets, I mean, the Mets sort of ran out of guys, right? It felt that way.
Yeah, I mean, you go back the last game they won in the postseason last year, Game 5 at the NLCS. They used Ryan Stanek for 8 outs and Edwin Diaz for 6, and that was in like a 7-run game because there was just no one else that they could rely on. And that's they looked at this market. Look, would the Mets have loved to trade these 6 guys to land a game 1 starter? Yeah, they would have preferred doing that, but there just isn't that guy out there that's available in this trade market. And so when you can't add to the front end of your rotation, the way to circumvent that is by adding at the back end of your bullpen. The Mets rotation is not full of guys you expect to go 6 and 7 innings in the postseason. It's mostly guys who they probably don't want facing an opposing lineup a third time through. So that you're probably going to see guys like Ryan Stanek and Gregory Soto in the 5th inning, but now they only have to get 3 outs each, and they can kind of stack these guys one on top of each other. The way the Padres bullpen has been built, the way that the Mets saw it up close this week and getting swept, that Padres bullpen goes from one fireballer to another through the 6th through 9th innings, and it's just really tough to build anything against them.
Do you think that the Mets do dip their toes in the because there might not be that level of starter that there's attainable, but there are starters. Do you think they dip their toe in the market before the deadline?
I'd be a little surprised at this point. I think the next step, if there is one, is more on the offensive side of things. Their offense has not been what they expected to be coming into the year. They're below, actually below league average in runs per game at this point. Francisco Lindor and Pete Alonso have slumped since hot starts to the season. They just haven't had the depth in the lineup that they expected. So they've got a couple places to fill. Center field is the spot they've focused on. Again, not an area with a lot of great talent available. That's why there's been a lot of talk about Luis Robert in New York. But they've got some fluid situations at second base, third base, and designated hitter where they could bring in someone who fits elsewhere and then reshuffle their defensive alignment to make it work. So I think that's probably the focus from now until what 24 hours from now, basically 21, whatever it is. And if there is a starting pitcher who comes available, who they think is a guy who can start a postseason game for them, that's kind of the bar they need to hit. They feel good about their depth. They need a guy who is better than, Clay Holmes, Frankie Montas, whoever would start that game 4 for them. That would be the guy they would target in the starting pitching market.
I love how this is shaping up with the Phillies and the Mets. I'm like, I love it. It's so good. It's so good, the back and forth. I mean, the back and forth and the competitiveness and the evenness and standings and everything else. And then you have today, we have this. It was, we mentioned the Mets trades. You have the Rogers trade, and then a little while later, here comes the Phillies with the Duran trade, and then the Mets come back with Helsley. What you've seen these teams now? So obviously, Dombrowski's really, really good about, and I tweet this, is that Dombrowski's really, really good at finding the last piece to a very to getting the last piece of the puzzle when it comes to a contending team. I mean, he's just good. He's good at that. And I love this trade. I love that trade for the Phillies. I like the trade for the Minnesota too, to be perfectly honest with you. Like Nick Abel's a good, he's going to be, I think, a good starter. And that, by all accounts, the 18-year-old catcher they got is going to be a really, really good player. But still, Duran is Duran. So, like, when you look at these two teams now, what comes to mind? Like this, because Tim, like we're going, we don't see this a lot. We don't see this dynamic of two alpha teams at the top of the division doing this. And this is awesome. How do you see it?
Yeah, like I think, that's kind of the fun in the National League this year is it's not just you've got a bunch of teams fighting for the for playoff spots, but fighting for kind of the different seedings within that playoff structure. You've got a tight race in the NL East, a tight race in the NL Central, what will be a tight race for the top seed in the National League. There should be a tight race between like who gets that second bye in the first round, which is hugely valuable. Like for a Mets team that ran out of gas, like we mentioned, ran out of gas from their pitching staff last year, it's really important for them to avoid having to play those extra two or three games at the start of October. They can get that rest. So I think, Philadelphia, that was their biggest hole.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Obviously, was the back end of the bullpen because they won't have Jose Alvarado for the playoffs after his suspension. They lost Jeff Hoffman. Jordan Romano has not worked out as his replacement. So adding Duran back there, now you've got Orion Kirkering setting him up.
David Robertson, who I sat down with today, Tim.
So they've got in Kirkering and Duran, that's a good late game setup for years now to come for them. I'm interested in seeing how aggressively they try to fill in the outfield because that's their other need. But still an area where they and the Mets are overlapping and trying to add players. But the National League East has we thought it was going to be a three team race. It's whittled down to these two who met in the playoffs last year. It should be really fun over these final 2 months to see how it shapes up.
And honestly, the Duran thing, it's people it should understand like this guy has a couple more years to control. I mean, this guy, he remains one of these guys where you're like, how the heck do you ever hit him? Like that is that guy. And he has a couple of years to control. As you said, you have Kirkring, Strom is still there. Like I said, Robertson's coming back. Who knows? I mean, like, who knows? We've seen closers switch teams and been bust. I don't know. But all I know is that there was no room for interpretation. This is what the Phillies knew they needed, and this is what they had. And I think that the Mets sort of like have I don't want to say one-up them, but they're like, all right, you know what? You want to play the back end of the bullpen game? We get these two guys. So I don't know.
I think a couple of weeks ago, I wondered, do the Mets need quantity or quality in their bullpen? Would they rather have the one really good late game piece, to set up for Edwin Diaz? Would they rather, or would they prefer to add three pieces to spread out their assets and kind of add that way so that they have multiple different options? They have more flexibility for Carlos Mendoza late in games. And they kind of did both. Like they've added more, if you had told me they were going to add three relievers, I would not have expected them to all be of this quality. And so I think they've done well. Like we don't want to overlook the trade for Gregory Soto, who's another guy who has late game experience, who's been an all-star, who has really good stuff that plays in October as long as he commands it properly. That's another deal that's going to help them down the stretch and into a potential postseason series here.
The last thing is your view of Stearns. Like so, there's so many as this deadline was approaching, we. Honestly, I think a lot of people were worried, like, oh, are these GMs all just, like, grasping to their guys too much and there's going to be no movement or whatever. And there's definitely this new age of GMs where you have to win the trade by 80%, so there's that element of it. But these trades, like, Stearns put himself out there a little bit, which I like. I love the fact that he almost Dombrowski'd it in a way. Say, like, okay, you know what? You know, we got a chance to win, let's win. You know?
Yeah.
It wasn't easy trades to make.
Yeah, and that's something that actually, if you look at his trade deadline history, he's done before. Like you go back to 2018 in Milwaukee, that was a team that added Jonathan Scope and Mike Moustakas and made some bigger moves at the deadline than you might think of. David Stearns has the reputation of a small market GM, like a guy who's going to tinker around the edges, get the most out of the roster he has, build some depth, but isn't going to kind of strike for that big move. And he's been relatively aggressive in the past. Even last year at the deadline, it wasn't a huge deadline for the Mets. Their playoff circumstances were a little bit different. They were not in playoff position at the deadline last year. They had just come back from a really rough start, but they added, four relievers and a designated hitter in Jesse Winker. They made a bunch and a starting pitcher. They made a bunch of different moves to make that roster better. They gave up some talent going the other way in those. So he's never been, he's not shy about moving prospects when he thinks it's worthwhile. He's not shy about making big moves at the deadline. He's, everyone knows the Josh Hader move, which did not work out for him. But the guy who's not afraid to pull the trigger when he thinks the opportunity is there for his organization. And we saw that on Wednesday.
Do you find a cloud behind you at all? Is there a cloud?
No, there's none.
It's amazing. San Diego, stupid San Diego. All right. Thank you, my friend. Thank you.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
All right, always good stuff from Tim Brennan. Always good stuff. Yep, does a great job for the Athletic. Now, let's listen to Lucas Sims, a guy who was traded away exactly a year from when I sat down with him in the dugout to talk about this stuff, exactly a year before. And he is currently pitching for Lehigh Valley in AAA after being released by the Nationals in early May, but he's working his way back to potentially being part of the National League East pennant race and having an impact there. It's a great perspective from somebody who has lived that life about switching teams at the deadline. All right, I hope everyone's well. At BB isn't boring. At BB isn't boring. We're going to keep the ball rolling. Obviously, we'll have plenty to talk to. We've already done some interviews, which I think you're going to enjoy going forward. But for the here and the now, it's all trade deadline. Here is someone, again, who has lived that life, that trade deadline life, Lucas Sims.
All right, there's no human being on the planet I'd rather be talking to right now than Lucas Sims. Thank you.
Good to see you again,
good
Rob.
Good to see you. Yeah, yeah. So a year ago,
yeah.
you were traded. I don't know if it was exactly a year ago, but pretty close to it, right?
Just about. I don't know what the date is.
But
today's deadline day, right?
Tomorrow.
Okay,
yeah. Well, no, actually, whoever's listening to it, it could be today, it could be tomorrow.
Okay, but it was right about
it was
a
right
year
around
ago.
Now. It was deadline
ago.
Week.
Right.
So I like asking guys before. First of all, congratulations on everything.
Thanks.
And I like asking. The first thing I like asking is sort of a cliche question, which is, where were you when you found out? Looking back at it. Because we've talked to so many people about the dynamics of being traded at the deadline. It's one thing to be traded, but to be traded at the deadline where it's chaotic,
right?
And you have to figure stuff out, and so what do you remember about that?
I remember my wife was going to a workout class, and she wasn't gonna have her phone on her. She was like, "Make sure you let me know if you hear anything, just in case." So I was watching my daughters at the house, and she took a 10:30 class or something, and I got a call at 10:35 or something. So I got the news that I was traded, and I couldn't get a hold of her. I'm like, I got a lot of stuff I need to get going.
And how old's your daughter?
They were 2.5 and
well,
6 months or something.
You know what that is. That's putting in front of Sesame Street you just have to put them in front of the TV and get your stuff done. Right?
My youngest wasn't mobile yet.
Okay.
And so, and my oldest was helping.
Yeah.
No, it was cool. So, yeah. I spent a lot of time in Cincinnati and really enjoyed my time there.
Yeah.
And then, to find out I was going to Boston and, Fenway to me was always one of my favorite ballparks to go to as a visitor.
Yeah.
And, when I, found out I was going to be a Red Sox, and I'm like, man, now I get to call Fenway home.
Yeah.
That was a really special
experience.
Did you
expect it? I mean,
like a trade or?
Yeah, a trade. Everyone's on pins and needles this whole week.
Yeah. I kind of figured it was a real possibility.
Yeah.
Not sure if it was expected. I was just aware that it could possibly happen. So
what's that feeling like when you? Who first of all? Who calls you?
Nick Kroll called me.
Oh, Nick Kroll. Okay.
And then I talked to Breslau afterwards.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So your head must be swimming, along with, like, watching the kids and trying to get in touch with your wife.
Right.
But it's a lot. And like we said, I talked to Lucas Hersick, who was another guy,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, you know, you're relying on your wife to, like, help move everything. And by the way,
now, my wife was incredible with it. Like, I got the phone call at 10:30, 11, somewhere around there, and I went to the ballpark, grabbed my stuff. She helped pack a suitcase full of clothes, and I mean, I was on a plane to Boston at 4, I think.
Really?
And
your family's back in
Cincinnati? Yeah, they were in Cincy, kind of, you know, packing everything up and getting ready to, you know, kind of move out of our Cincinnati spot and get a place in Boston. And my wife was she was a rock star over that.
What is the thing that maybe for, because we're here to educate, so the people who are about to go through this or have gone through this, that maybe you don't expect when you have to do this and on the run in the middle of a season, what is the thing that may, what would you say, like, that you that people may not expect?
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
It's, I don't know, embrace the chaos.
All right. Oh, that's suppose. A good one. Yeah.
I suppose, like, you know, it's an exciting time.
Yeah.
You know, there's aspects of it that could feel a little bit stressful, but I'd say embrace the chaos. I mean,
that's a great way to put it.
You know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
It's sometimes not the most, it's not the easiest or sometimes the most convenient, but, you know, generally speaking, you're going to, you know, a team that wants you.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's an opportunity to make new teammates, make new friends.
Did you know anybody on the Red Sox when you went there?
I knew a handful of guys.
Okay.
Tyler O'Neill I knew from the Fall League back in 2015.
Oh, really?
And then it felt like 100 at-bats against him when he was with St. Louis.
Yeah.
So I know T.O. a little bit. And then just loosely, like I kind of felt like I knew Pivetta from, like, shagging in the outfield or something. Yeah. Like, so I knew a couple guys.
But that's the thing is that I just find it fascinating because, you know, you have to move the family. You have that part of it. And then you have all your friends from your previous team
mm-hmm.
who you've been tight with and having this goal with through since spring training. And then, boom, all of a sudden you have new people who, you know, and a new fan base. Like, who? And then that's another part of it.
I thought, you know, I've been fortunate enough and to have had a pretty long career thus far. And I've had a lot of really good teammates. And so in that regard, you know, coming into Boston's clubhouse, I knew that, like Chris Martin, for example,
yeah.
I never really met Marty, but I knew we had a lot of mutual teammates and people that I really respected, people that I was friends with. And so I'd bond with Marty kind of like, hey, you know, you're teammates with so-and-so.
Yeah.
And, oh, yeah, I love that guy. And I'm like, all right, you love that guy, I love that, like,
immediately.
By default.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
All right, if you're cool with him, I'm cool with you. Like,
yeah, it's like
you kind of bond over that. So it was a really easy transition.
Well, and then there's the I want to impress. Like, I want to impress my new teammates. I want to impress the fan base. And I think you came in. Maybe it was your first time, and you had a good, really good outing about it was a high leverage.
Seattle,
you're right.
Came in Seattle.
Yeah.
I think I needed one or two outs.
But that goes a long way. I mean, like, where you feel like, okay, first impressions are always important, right?
Yeah, it was it was pretty special, honestly. You know, come in and I don't know, it almost felt like a debut all over again, kind of. You know, going out, the phone rings and you kind of have the butterflies, and you go out there and just try and do your job.
But again, like, that's to check off that box is good, because, you know, like, I remember Kyle Schwarber when in 2021 he wasn't playing. You know, he was the guy with the bad hamstring, was on the side, and people were like saying, "Oh well, you know, why'd you go get this guy? Like, he has a bad hamstring, he's sitting on the side." And then, you know, next thing you know, it took a while though. But to have that great first impression while your wife is trying to figure out everything, I know, it's just a weird dynamic to me. It's like chaotic.
It was kind of like, I think they, I had like the opportunity to maybe just, because I think we were going to Texas next.
Yeah.
And so I came up on essentially getaway day, or the day before, and they're like, well, you could just maybe meet us in Texas or whatever. And I was like, I want to get up there as fast as I can. And get up there and sleep and, you know, kind of get settled. And then, go ahead and get out there. Like, yeah. I don't know, just go ahead and, you know, you have to wait around to debut very long. I think it was a 4 o'clock game or something, and, you know, wake up, just go get them.
So, okay, so we've talked about the deadline. So what's it been like in this year? You go through the offseason this year. Relievers in the offseason is always a weird thing. Like, I remember, you know, we talked to Phil Maton, like, he was, like, signed at the very end. Like, it's always a weird thing, the offseason, and then you get into this year. For you, looking back, let's do a year ago, how different you are or how different it feels. How different are you and how different does it feel, and how do you feel about things?
Yeah, I mean, this year's been difficult. You know, I've gone through some struggles. It's probably, just to be frank, it's probably been one of the more difficult years of my career. Just battling a lot of, just battling some things. But I've learned a lot about myself, and I like where I'm at right now. Turning in the right direction, and you know, just try and finish the year strong. You know, hopefully get up to Philly, and, you know, hopefully help them win a World Series. But, you know, if not, just continue, you know, be down here and continue to get my work in. And, you know, if I can impart any sort of, you know, like a helping hand with some of these other guys to, you know, hopefully achieve their goal. And, you know, it's been a tough year, but, you know, I think ultimately, like, I'm going to be better because of it, for sure.
Okay, this is a cliche question. What have you learned about yourself this season, but maybe you didn't know? I learned like stuff about myself, and I'm old, you know, every year.
Yeah. You're never too old to keep learning.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, it's not always, it's not always too hard to teach an old dog new tricks.
So what new tricks have, I'm not going to call you an old dog because you're not an old dog.
Yeah, now that we got D-Rob here. D-Rob's the old dog. Honestly, it's just been pretty mentally taxing. But I've, in a way, kind of just refound a new love for the game.
Oh, good.
You know, finding a love for the game. In a way that, you know, I've always loved this game, but I've found a newfound respect, a newfound love, a newfound appreciation for this game. You know, ultimately it just kind of makes me happy.
That's awesome, man. That's great. I love that.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. So why isn't baseball boring? No wrong answers.
It's the most beautiful game on planet Earth. Yeah. I mean, it's, You might see something new every single day. There's the matchup between the pitcher and the hitter, and you know, the other eight guys on the field. And baseball is not boring. It's the most beautiful game in the world.
Awesome. Listen, we're all pulling for you.
It's
awesome stuff, and I appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thanks. Sure thing, Rob. Appreciate it.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.